Empower Radio presents Out of the Fog. Join intuitive guide and spiritual teacher Karen Hager for lively, positive conversation with light workers, healers, and dynamic wisdom keepers. Get ready for inspiration and connection. This is Out of the Fog on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Karen Hager.
Hello and welcome to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager. Each week at this time, we gather for a spiritual conversation and enlightening guests, and I am glad you're here. Time and distance are no barrier to energy, and that means that no matter when you're listening, no matter how you found us, you are here for a reason. And I hope that something in the next hour lights you up and helps you move forward. Now, today's show is designed to inspire you to open your heart more fully, to love more deeply. Doesn't matter if you're in a relationship or not right now, but I bet you're going to feel uplifted by the story of soul-mated love that our guest today is going to share with you. She is the author of Our Spirits Dance, Dr. Susan Allison, and that book is an exchange of love poems between Susan and her late husband, Thomas. We're also going to be talking about the difference between soulmates and twin flames, and you'll learn how you can attract your perfect match. Now, you might want Kleenex. I needed Kleenex as I read through the book. Beautiful, moving exchange between the two lovers. And expect your heart to open. Are you ready to meet her? Dr. Susan Allison is the author of 5 books, Conscious Divorce, Breathing Room, Empowered Healer, her recent poetry book, Our Spirits Dance, The Poetry of Soulmates, and her newest book, which is coming out next year, is You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven. Dr. Allison is a transpersonal psychologist in private practice, an energy healer, shamanic practitioner, ordained minister, hypnotherapist, singer-songwriter, and a professional speaker. She is very busy indeed. You can find out more about Susan and her work at empoweredhealer.com. Susan, welcome to Out of the Fog.
Karen, thank you so much. I'm just very happy to be here.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm wondering, can you share with us a little bit about your journey, a little bit about what brought you to this place?
Well, I think for most of us, it's a long journey. You know, if you look back, you can see seeds of all of it, and at the time may not even understand why you're doing what you're doing or studying what you're studying, but then it all makes sense, and that's where I am right now, is it all makes sense. As a child, I was a healer, but nobody called it that. I could put my hands on my parents and on my animals and other people, and their pain would go away. They'd feel better. Even wounds would heal. And this eventually, when I was an adult, led me to become a Reiki master, to study the reconnection with Eric Pearl, and become an energy healer with, you know, using energy medicine to help people heal physically and emotionally and spiritually. But that started when I was probably 5 years old. And, you know, over the years, I feel like I've always been a seeker of spiritual truth, and, you know, was raised in a Christian church, had some experiences that were quite difficult there, left that church, went on to become a Baha'i, and, you know, loved the teachings of the Baha'i faith, which were are very inclusive and see all religion as really one spiritual truth, and all prophets as coming at the exact time they need to come to uplift humanity. And so I also, you know, absolutely love earth-based spirituality, have done 3 vision quests, and just love shamanic work, have studied with 4 different shamans. And I feel like today I've combined it all. And in my practice, I use shamanic journey to help people. I teach them to journey to spirit worlds, to journey inside their own bodies and heal themselves, which is also in my book, Empowered Healer. And I use, you know, hypnosis to help people go deeply into trance. And so forth and so on. And I just feel that everything we've done in our lives is leading, or it's all a recipe, and the recipe is absolutely perfect, even if we don't understand at the time. It all comes together for us, I feel, and that's what's happened for me, is that it's all together in this recipe of my life that I use with clients, that I use, you know, for my own growth, and I hope that that answered your question.
Finding that recipe can be difficult, I think, if we expect it to always be perfect. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot with people sometimes who are looking for, I had a similar experience to yours, Susan, where I feel like I got to a place in my time where, in my life, where all of a sudden things made sense. And I went, oh, I get it. Oh, I know what I'm supposed to do next. Yep. But there are a lot of people out there who are still looking for that, that release. Do you feel that we are more disconnected now than we've been before?
You know, I think I don't like to even say that out loud, just because I really believe in self-fulfilling prophecy and the law of attraction. And I feel that the world is challenging in the sense that there's so much distraction. But I love for us to turn inward and to really start listening to our intuitions again. And all my books, even my book on divorce, is about turning inside to that wise teacher, that there is an inner guidance, there's a higher self. And just yesterday in my therapy practice, I worked with several people, teaching them how to journey into the heart space and connect with the higher self and really hear that being's voice. And so we can hear it through our intuition from now on. Ever since, you know, once we do that, once we connect, then we can hear that voice instead of the ego voice that's really fear-based, that tells us we can't do it, that tells us things are limited, that tells us that the world's too crazy, that tells us that, you know, the world's going to end, or whatever it's telling us. We have to listen to that higher part of us that really inspires, encourages, tells us we're on the right track, and also can point us in the direction of what it is that is our soul's purpose here on the planet this lifetime. So,
and that what we see as endings may be beginnings. You're the author of that book, Conscious Divorce.
Yes.
And I work with a lot of clients who are moving through that transition, ending a relationship.
Yep.
To do that consciously takes work, because sometimes the pain of that can shoot you back into old habits, shoot you right out of that heart space and into a place of pain and fear.
Yes, and I think that, I mean, Time Magazine years ago did a whole study on stress and so forth, and I mean, the loss, you know, death of a loved one was number one, but divorce, you know, was right up there in the top, you know, three or four. And divorce is a death. It is the ending of a dream, and sometimes long after we no longer miss the person, or we realize that we were, you know, the relationship had taught us everything it could, or it was time to move on, or whatever, we aren't missing the person as much as we're missing the dream. And that I see, because I worked for many years with clients and couples going through divorce, and did divorce groups for women especially, and it is an ending, and we have to grieve, you know, that whoever said the only way out is through is absolutely right, that we have to grieve, and it's not fun. You know, we want to skip that part. We want to jump from, which is why we have so much serial monogamy. You know, we have people not grieving and not looking at their part in what happened. And then they just go out and immediately want to attract a new partner, and because they think it'll make the pain go away, but they haven't really grieved, they haven't healed from the loss of this part of their life, this dream, this person, and it doesn't bode well, usually, is what I see, if people try to you know, this fast-paced society encourages people to want to move through it super fast. We're not supposed, we don't want to feel bad in this culture. We want to take a pill. We want to something instant that's going to get us out of anything that is that resembles pain. But the pain is a teacher. You know, the suffering is a teacher, and it has been for me in my life, and is right now going through the loss of my husband, the loss of the absolute love of my life and soulmate. But I have to encourage your listeners to do the work, and it's work to be able to heal from a loss that's very deep.
I'm hearing you say that pain is part of that recipe sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it has been for me, and I think it has been probably for many, many of your listeners, that it's pain is also a teacher. You know, it's teaching us, and it's, you know, it's, you said earlier that endings are also beginnings, and I do feel that that's true, that we sometimes can't see it. It just feels so hard and so heavy and difficult. But there is, there's light, you know. I wrote a poem once, it wasn't in this book, but just about, you know, I see a pencil of light in the distance, and it's drawing me forward, and I can see it now. I can see that bit of light, but at times it feels like it's, you know, we're in the darkness for a long time.
Can you tell us about Thomas, about who he is, and about that this joyful interplay that brought about our spirit's dance?
This was just an absolutely, and still is since I'm in contact with him even now, an amazing connection, relationship, spiritual joining. We met on a full moon night very close to the summer solstice in 1994, and we met in a poetry group. And, you know, you were saying, oh, you know, earlier when you introduced me, oh, we're going to talk about how to attract your perfect match. Well, usually you're not, I mean, I think it's best if you're not out there looking, that you're not going places and you're going to find your soulmate. It really doesn't work that way, at least in my experience. It works to get you out there so that you're out there in the world again, but you have to be in love with yourself first, I feel. And I was like, my husband described me as a flower opening. I was just this flower. I was just opening. I was writing, and I was in love with poetry. And I was writing a couple of books simultaneously, and I was out there on my bike, and I was in the ocean. And so I was so happy. And he was also in a similar place of feeling really expanded in his life and just really so excited about his work as a writer. And then we met, and he asked me to have tea afterwards, and we had tea and we talked for hours. And then he innocently said, let's go home and write full moon poems, and we'll share them at the next group. Well, later we found out we both were up all night. I had visions of someone that he had told me about in his life who spoke to me, and I was this very practical, rational, logical woman that nothing like this had ever happened to me, and my heart had completely opened on that night, and several of the poems in the beginning of the book are about that evening, and it was both exhilarating, breathtaking, magical, and utterly frightening. I was afraid of something this intense. It was incredibly intense, and which I do feel is more of a twin flame union when you have that intensity when you first meet. And so, things progressed. You know, we had several times we were apart because I was afraid of this intensity. It was really scary. And I've had several people call me about this and email me after I've been on several radio shows. And it's often one partner. When there is a soul-mated twin flame union, there's one partner that runs away or one partner that's afraid of this intensity as if they're going to be swallowed up by it or lose their identity. And I think that's what happened for me. But my husband was very patient and really believed and was really had a lot of courage that this was meant to be. And so we married 3 years later on the summer solstice in 1997. And then he transitioned in 2013. So we had 19 years of really deep, deep, passionate, soulmated love. It was a miracle. It was a miracle that I didn't run away and absolutely miss this incredible love affair over 19 years. So that's a little snapshot of what happened.
It's part of what I believe lies in that heart space is the strength for us to keep going when we're afraid,
yep.
Keep going even when we're afraid we'll be swallowed up, to follow that love, that passion where it leads us.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So thank goodness I did, you know, and there are poems in the book that where my husband basically said, one is called Welcome to Love, you know, and he says, you know, stay or walk away, but keep the doors open, let in the light. And he was convinced after meeting, I mean, our very first night, the next morning, he phoned me. He was already deeply in love with me, and he said he knew his life as he'd known it was over. And he was a very, very intuitive Buddhist who had been in a spiritual practice for many, many years and was used to following his heart, was used to being the artist, and just really letting himself feel deeply and to do it no matter what. And so he really taught me to open my heart. And I'd always been, you know, living from the neck up, which I think a lot of people do, in my intellect, you know, in my mind. And it was Tom that really got me in touch with my body, got me in touch with my heart, with my feelings, more than I'd ever allowed myself to in my life.
Are you comfortable sharing? I'd love for you to read to us. Can you share something from the book, maybe from that beginning stage, that beginning intensity of the relationship?
Sure. Let me go back. Well, I mean, I might as well read the first two poems we wrote, which when we got back to the writing group, they had the same title and were all filled with nature imagery, the way we write similarly in the sense that we use a lot of imagery from nature. But Tom's poem, they're both called Moon in Cancer, because it's actually because my moon is in Cancer astrologically, and people didn't know that about the title. But so his poem, Moon in Cancer, and he wrote this the night we met. Full moon in Cancer blasts through clear sky. On granite boulders, I ponder shimmering swells, lapping cool, silent beach. Sand crabs burrow into wet sand, waves lapping thin membrane shells. Gulls, seals, otters, unable to sleep, groan and chant in the humming glow. Tide pulls back to the outer ocean, exposing starfish on kelp-glazed reefs. Closing my eyes, celestial rays shine deep within, where now I wade in crystal pools, merge with you, spirit sister. So that was his poem. And then the poems, as you mentioned, speak to each other like love letters across the page. And my poem across the page is called Moon in Cancer. Full moon in Cancer illumines my path. Walking barefoot through green clover. Warm wind ruffles my hair, lifts my black silk skirt. A stream of white milk pours onto apple trees, brightens purple grapes, turns red roses pink, jasmine iridescent. White magnolia blossoms unfold petal by skin-soft petal, open fully to moonbeams. Stars fall in the silence. My breath quickens, reliving this evening. Your brown hands reaching for mine across white teacups, remembering our eyes meeting, our hearts knowing everything.
These are so personal. As I read the book, I can hear you talking to each other, is what it feels like to me.
Yep.
Why did you release the book? Why put something so personal and so sacred out without knowing who would receive it?
You know, this had been a project we'd been working on before Tom's death, that a friend, or actually she was the events coordinator at a local bookstore, wanted us to finish this book and then come for a pre-Valentine event with wine and chocolate and read our poems back and forth to each other to inspire people and so on. She said, you know, I really want you to do that. And we said, okay, we'd love to. And so we worked on the book, and then Tom had been sick for 6 years, not incapacitated. We still had a fairly normal life. But the last year, and this was in she wanted us to do this Valentine's Day of 2013, and Tom was way too sick by then, and he passed away in August of 2013. So we never finished the project, and he said to me that he wanted me to finish this and publish it to inspire people, to inspire those people out there that no longer believe in love. They've been hurt. They've closed their hearts. People who are in relationship and they're letting their love die. He wanted this to inspire people to keep their hearts open, as you said earlier, no matter what, and to open them more fully and realize that this kind of love isn't just for us, for the two of us. It is for everyone who has the courage to, as you said earlier, to keep their hearts open. And, you know, I've done several book signings, and people at my public events, my live events, come up to me afterwards, both couples and individuals. I had one woman just crying in the front row, came up and said, and actually she raised her hand and said, I believe in love again. I have closed my heart for so many years, and I now believe in love again. That one woman, that was worth what I went through to do this book, which was very cathartic. It was very heartbreaking at times. Also very cleansing and healing for me to do this project. But we both wanted to inspire people, and I feel the book does that.
That's true, I believe. I'm a big nut about daily spiritual practice, and it's true for me that when I am focusing on the divine, that having something to focus on is like a window opening into my heart, into my divine connection. And one of the qualities that I see as I read these poems is that in each one is like a little jewel, a little something that helps open me up, not just to love for my partner, or but also my love for the divine and the way that we are loved by the divine. And I'm wondering if that is something that is in there on purpose.
Yes, and I don't think it was, you know, it wasn't that we set out to have that there. It's just who we are and who we have been for many years, both of us on a really deep spiritual path for many, many years before we met. And so yes, it's here that there is an undercurrent in the book of a love for spirit and a belief that we're divinely led. And that is part of the opening, obviously, is, you know, opening to the highest, and not just the highest within us, but the highest in all there is. And, you know, this is something that is very evident in my new book, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, is about teaching readers to be able to journey to spirit worlds, to connect with all of their spirit allies and guides and teachers and angels and departed loved ones, and really be able to take these messages and this wisdom to live their life more fully here.
This is
rather than waiting till you have a near-death experience or you die to go there. For 20 years, I've been going to these spirit realms, and you can go now. And that's why I've written the book.
When we come back after this short break, I'd like to talk to you about that, how we can connect in those ways. You're listening to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager. My guest is Dr. Susan Allison. We'll be right back after this.
I'm home and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
At 1 second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
License and registration.
But I'm walking.
Do you want to upset an officer of the law?
No, sir.
Good. I pulled you over today for littering.
I didn't litter.
Wow. That's what they all say. Unfortunately, I saw you drop a pair of thunder thighs a few blocks back. Probably happened as you were biting into that apple you're holding.
How'd you know they're my thunder thighs?
Well, my young friend, I'd like to say 2 years in the police academy helped figure it out. But between us, it was smallstep.gov.
Smallstep.gov?
Yep, Rooney. It's this site with tons of easy ways to lose weight. Some steps are so easy, people don't realize they're doing them. Like you taking small step number 83, snack on fruits. Go to smallstep.gov, you'll see. You can drive off now.
I'm still walking.
Take a small step to get healthy at smallstep.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And now back to Out of the Fog with Karen Hager on Empower Radio. EmpowerRadio.com.
Welcome back to Out of the Fog. I'm Karen Hager, and my guest is Dr. Susan Allison. We're talking about her book of poetry, Our Spirits Dance, which is a love letter conversation between Susan and her late husband, Thomas. She is also the author of many other books, and you can find out more about Susan and her work at empoweredhealer.com. And of course, I love your feedback on this show. What do you think about what you're hearing? What are experiences of great love or great loss in your life? I invite your feedback. You're always welcome to email me. You can do that through my website, which is karenhager.com. Now, Susan, as we were moving into the break, you were talking about the ways in which that love that we can hold here not only can be a mirror for divine love, but can transcend mortality, can transcend time. And I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about how your connection with your husband has continued after he left his body.
Absolutely. And anyone who's listening who has lost someone, I want to encourage you to connect with them. And in my newest book, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, I give lots of suggestions, and I can give a few, but just in terms of my story, when Tom transitioned a little over a year ago, right away I felt this intense energy in my body. And some would say that, you know, it was the kundalini, but it was just this pulsing. And kundalini isn't just sexual energy, although some people say it is. It is the life force. And I really feel that he joined his energy with mine when he died. For about 3 months, I had this very, very intense pulsing in my body. And I, over the years, have learned to take the kundalini energy, that pulsing, which is usually in the lower chakras, and I can take a breath and I can breathe it up and out the top of my head. Otherwise, it's way too intense. And that's what was happening for 3 months, is that he was in my body, in a sense, and also would speak to me. I could hear him, and I still can. If I ask a question, I hear an answer, and it's in his voice. Or I'll be outdoors and saying, you know, oh, you know, I wish you could see the blossoms on the peach tree this year. And I'll hear, I can see it, it's beautiful, and are you going to make jam this year? You know, it's like he can talk to me in terms of just communicating on a moment-to-moment basis. I can hear him. And with the shamanic technique that I do, which I have been practicing for over 20 years, I can go into trance, go into a deep meditative state, usually to the sound of a drum, but I can do it just with my breath. And I can journey to spirit worlds. And, you know, shamanic teachers say that there are three spirit worlds. There's a lower world, a middle world, and an upper world. And I've seen Tom in the middle world and in the upper world mainly, maybe two or three times in my middle world, which is, the middle world is like a dream. It's like a dreamscape. It's the most like this world. And Hawaiian shamans say it's where we go after we die, that we, if we have this place, it isn't as frightening, that we, our spirit knows where to go. And we go to this, the Hawaiians call it your garden, your sacred garden. And I have a poem, the last poem in the book, Immortal. 2 days before my husband transitioned, I went up to a beach and I did a shamanic journey. I had my drumming on my iPod and I was listening to it. I went into trance and I went to this world that I go to, this beautiful place in nature. And Tom was there in this beautiful tree of life. And there were huge fruits on this tree that were golden. And anyway, I was shocked, because usually you only see spirit beings in these worlds. You don't see a living person. But I believe now, and I believed, you know, once I looked at the journey, he was trying to prepare me for his death. And he was totally in light. He looked like he did when we first met. His hair was kind of a little bit long, and he was like this free spirit, you know, in a Hawaiian shirt, and was joyful and had me take a bite of this fruit. And he was trying to tell me that he had a foot in each world, that he was transitioning between this world and the next. And now I can visit him anytime I want. And I go to a place and see him there, and we talk and we walk and we swim and we do all these things together. And it's amazing. And anyone can learn to do this, I really believe. And that is why I've written the book that will be out probably in a year. But anyone can go to these worlds, and anyone can connect with loved ones who are no longer here in body. And it is possible to no longer fear death and believe we're all immortal. And we know where our loved ones have gone, and that gives us great comfort. So, so that's just a little bit about my story.
Are you comfortable sharing one of those poems from about around the time of his passing?
Yes. Let me read the one I was mentioning, which is Immortal, just because, you know, let me read his first, because what is interesting in the book, and someone who did a live reading with me, she read Tom's poems and I read mine. She said, wow, you notice that your poems get longer in the book and his gets shorter. And isn't that interesting and symbolic? And it is, because he wrote these poems before his death, but a while before his death, but he always knew that he was a spiritual being. He always knew that he wasn't just a body, that he was immortal. And one of the reasons is he had a near-death experience where his spirit did leave his body, and he experienced being that spirit and looking down at his body in the hospital. This is before we met. So he always knew this. But here's his poem at the very end of the book called Spirit Flight. Spirit, glide into light, me upon your wings in flight, higher, higher, out from sight. And then my poem, Immortal. In a vision I see you days before your death, in a tree of light and golden fruit, smooth-skinned with brown hair curling to muscled shoulders. You swing to the ground, pick a bright globe, feed me a bite, then eat the rest, pulp and juice on lips and chins. Sticky with sweetness, we laugh and kiss. Pear-shaped with mango seed, the Chinese and Hindus say these fruits bring love, abundance, immortality. You, always the way-shower, divine teacher, give me a taste of infinity. Help me understand there is no death. The soul and love, limitless, timeless, endless, our spirits joined for eternity. Now, your body may be ash, but our spirits meet in heaven, where we walk a white sand beach, hand in hand, making tantric love and spiraling together in a swirling, pulsing wave of amber light. We are immortal.
That's incredibly powerful language for that dance that continues even when you're still holding your physical body and he no longer holds his.
Exactly. Wow. Exactly.
Exactly. Go ahead, Susan. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead, Karen.
Do you feel that your creative collaboration with him continues? Have you continued to write poetry since his passing, and is his voice a part of that?
Yes. You know, this book, definitely he was helping me write this book and put this book together, and even the cover, I painted the painting that's on the cover of two spirits rising, and it looks like flames and water, and he definitely helped me paint. I hadn't painted in 5 years, and I did this watercolor, and it was done in 20 minutes.
Wow.
And I know I could feel his energy. I could feel him, in a sense, holding my hand. And he was also an artist and wanted to be actually a painter for years, and that didn't happen, but always encouraged me to paint. And I know he was helping me paint this painting on the cover. And also definitely comes through, you know, and he talks to me in the poem. And there are several poems I've written since his death that are inspired by his presence. And so, yes, this is continuing to happen, that he's, I don't know whether he, I wouldn't say he's exactly my muse, but he is definitely shows up in my poems in ways and helps me in terms of following my intuition in terms of anything artistic that I'm doing.
This is such a beautiful story of lasting connection, of an exchange that that keeps going. And I'm wondering, as you've traveled around and done interviews and book signings and been talking about the book, have you connected with people who feel like this is something that they could never have? That it's special to you, but oh, too bad for them because they can't have it?
Really good question, because I, in fact, one reason I thought of not releasing this book, and I definitely thought of not doing live readings, is I didn't want readers or the audience to feel that it was only us. And so in one of my readings, there were probably 100 people there at Bookshop Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, Central California. I said that. I said it just out loud. I said, the last thing I want is for any of you to think that this is special only to us, because all of you can have this, but it takes courage, because you really have to open your heart. You really have to work on yourself first and feel ready to go out there and say, okay, universe, co-create with me. I really want to have a soul connection with someone, and I am working on myself, and I'm almost ready. And when people say to me, oh, I want to find my soulmate, I said, well, then you need to get ready and work on yourself. So I said this, in fact, to the audiences when I did my live readings, and I just really believe that anyone can have this, but it means really loving yourself first, that you are your own soulmate. And then you go out, and it's like this person is just there, and they see your light, and you see their light. And that, to me, is what happens. And it's happened to not just me, but other, clients and friends and so on who actually do it in that way. So I had a couple come up to me during one reading, after a reading, and they said that they were just beginning exactly what I was reading about, and it was just mind blowing for them to hear the poetry, because it's what they were living. And the man said, and they had tears in their eyes, and the man said, what advice do you have for us? And I said, don't give up, no matter any challenges that are happening outside you. Do not abandon this precious gift that you've been given. And so you're going to need courage. You're going to need to keep your heart open and to really embrace this and know that life just keeps happening, and there'll be things that happen that will be somewhat challenging, but you need to just keep trusting that this is right. And they had their arms around each other, and I had other couples come up and say that they were going to go home and just hold each other. Because, you see, if you are in a relationship and you love this person, but it's gotten a bit stale, or you haven't really connected in the way you used to, this book is an invitation to do just that. And, one couple wrote me, they wrote me on Facebook, and they just said that they went home and just cuddled and just held each other, and they both cried because they still have each other, and Thomas is no longer here in body, and I miss him terribly. And even though I can connect with him, he isn't here physically. And so all your listeners who are with someone, hold on to them and deepen your connection and keep your heart open and make it beautiful.
Do you believe that there's one person for everyone? Do we all have one soulmate, one twin flame, and we're meant to be finding and connecting with them?
That's another good question that I've been asked before, that and I don't believe there's just one person, especially soulmates. I believe that because I've done this shamanic work, I know that we have a soul family and we have a soul group in the upper world. We have beings we've been with through all our incarnations, and I believe that there's more than one soulmate. And soulmates are often, just from what I have experienced and researched, they're often beings that we have been with in other incarnations and in lots of them. And so this person feels very familiar. It's as if, you know, you have known them forever when you meet. There's a familiarity. They feel familiar. Twin flames, it's a little different. And I might say that I don't know if there is more than one. And a twin flame union is more intense. It's more psychic. There's, you know, I have a poem in the book where I know exactly what Tom's going to say, exactly what he's thinking, exactly what he's feeling. And that was the first night we met. And the twin flame union is often more intense. There is more of this psychic connection. And often the twin flame, I have a friend in New York who's writing a book about twin flames, and she says that often the twin flame is not here embodied with us, that the twin flame is in the next world, is in the spirit world, is not here embodied at the same time. And they are inspiring us. They are like an oversoul, or like a being that a guide, a guardian angel sort of being that helps us in our lives. And this is our twin flame is not here, because the twin flame, if here, which is somewhat rare, we met not in our, you know, not in our 20s. We met in middle life, and it was just, I feel grateful that we met, and but it's not always, it's more rare, I believe, than this, in the soulmated union. And it's, the twin flame is our teacher. So you look at them and they are reflecting back who we are just by looking in their eyes. And also they will teach us things. My husband taught me so much. And you have to be open to that, because it's not always easy for someone to be your teacher and you are theirs. You're twins. And so you're reflecting back and forth, wisdom for your spiritual growth. But we are not always receptive to that. But that is what I believe the twin flame union is about. It's about uplifting us to a higher and higher vibration, and so that we're just more highly evolved as souls by being together. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. And it makes me wonder if our soulmate relationships can change over time. I often hear from people who are in relationships where one partner has changed a lot and the other partner hasn't changed. And they'll say to me, but wait, I have to stay with him. He's my soulmate. This is it, right? I have to stay. How do you feel about that? Can those relationships change? Do we ever step away from our soulmates?
Yes, I think that does happen. I think that it's everything. I mean, I believe everything's a choice. I really do. And that we make choices. And one partner can be fearful of growing and changing. And they also cannot want their partner to change. I see a lot of couples that one person is growing, one person is evolving, and the other one is terrified of losing them and tries to control them and keep them from going out and doing workshops or having friends. And that's all fear-based. And so I do see situations where people believe that this is their soulmate, and then one partner becomes somewhat entrenched or fearful and doesn't change and doesn't evolve, and they're not growing in a parallel way any longer. And I do believe if the one partner who is evolving can get through to them, can get them to go to counseling, can get them to go to church or some kind of spiritual place and open up again, or, you know, go to Bora Bora and stay in a place over the water and just really connect at that deep, deep soul level again, it can happen, but it can be effortful. And if it takes both of you, which is what I see with divorce, you know, it takes two people. It's never one person, you know, even though at times people blame this one person, it's never one person. It's both people. And the same when a relationship is sort of stalled, both people, you know, are responsible for restarting it, but only if they're both willing. And that is the, you know, as Shakespeare said, there is the rub. You know, if one person is not willing, is, you know, they're entrenched, they're refusing to budge, then I think it's very difficult for the person who is growing and evolving and their vibration is getting higher and higher to stay in a situation that is very limiting. So, and I hope that answered the question.
Oh, it does. And it brings me back to that. Our responsibility, our gift, our adventure, our choice, if we embrace it, to always be opening to love, to take responsibility for ourselves. As you said so beautifully, we are our own soulmates first, I think.
That's right.
And in situations like that, it's always about the partner who has the awareness at the moment taking responsibility for their part in what's going on.
Exactly. And I feel that we can absolutely take responsibility for our part. We can, you know, I mean, I can think of one situation in terms of clients. I can think of one situation where they thought they were soulmates when they first met. And the one person, you know, she kept trying and trying and trying to get back to this place. And she finally had to leave. And it was because, you know, as she expressed, that her own soul was dying. And I was in a relationship like that, and my soul was dying. But I didn't even realize it for a long time, because I thought this was as good as it gets, and this was all that there was, and that I had to stay, and I had to morph into being this person that he wanted. And my soul was shriveling up, because I was not listening to my own highest self, telling me what my purpose was here, what it is that I'm supposed to do in this lifetime. And I believe we all have a soul's purpose. You know, we all have something we're supposed to be doing here. And our job is to figure out what that is and then do it, especially as things become more dire in terms of the environmental concerns, in terms of what's happening in the world. We are, you know, it's essential that we figure out who we are and then do what it is that we need to do here right now, or we wouldn't be here at this particular time, is what I believe.
I know that part of your work is as a healer and as a counselor. Can you tell people how they can connect with you, find out more about the book, but also explore the other services that you offer?
Yes, Karen. People can get my book, Our Spirits Dance, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and probably from their local bookstores, and can connect with me, as you've mentioned a couple of times, by going to empoweredhealer.com. And people can also email me. I'm very open to having people email me at drsusanallison@gmail.com. So it's just Dr. Susan Allison, Allison has two L's, @gmail.com. And I'm going to give a toll-free number also, and I'm offering today a 15-minute free consultation to anyone who calls. And the number is 866-268-2121.
That's fantastic. I'm writing down that number so that I can say it again at the end, so that we're sure that people get that. That's 866-268-2121 to connect with Dr. Susan Allison for that 15-minute complimentary consultation. What would you like to leave the listeners with? What final words?
Well, what's coming is to follow your heart. And, you know, there's a poem years ago, and I don't know all of it, but it says, follow your heart. Even though the path can be wild, you know, hold on to this hand, which could be a divine hand, you know, like a mother's hand, that will, the path will twist and turn. Forbear to question, but obey. The heart, the true pathfinder, knows the way.
Dr. Susan Allison, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Karen.
Oh, you're very welcome. That was Dr. Susan Allison. We were talking about her book of poetry, Our Spirits Dance. She's the author of many other titles as well. Her new book, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, will be released in 2015. Find out more about Susan and what she's offering at empoweredhealer.com. She is offering a 15-minute complimentary consultation, and you can connect with her at 866-268-2121. And of course, oh, I'd love your feedback on what you heard today. If you've got questions, conundrums, suggestions, you can always reach me through my website, KarenHager.com. And thank you for listening today. Together we are spreading a little more light in the world, and a little more light is always a good thing. Until next time, I'm wishing you peace.